All right, we are now joined by a very, very special recurring guest, friend of the podcast. It is Kia Tigers pitcher Will Crow, live from Korea. Dude, it's so great to see you. I think it's been 2 years. I want to say summer of 22, the last time you were on. So a lot's happened. It's great to see you. How are we doing?
We're doing good, man. We're moving and grooving. You know, like you said, we're in Korea, so still learning, getting acclimated, you know, figuring some things out, but we're doing good. We're in a good spot.
Absolutely. So I wanted to start, I was looking at the last couple box scores from your time over there in Korea so far, back-to-back outings, no runs. How are you feeling? I think it's like four starts now into your Korean baseball career. How's everything going overall?
Yeah, for, you know, the most part, it's going good. You know, you got to, you know, get adjusted a little bit, you know, find out what, you know, you can and you can't do. So, you know, my first two starts, I kind of went into it as we have a veteran catcher. So I was like, you know, I'm going to kind of let him dictate how we go about this thing, you know, how what he thinks, or he knows these guys. He's been in the league over here. It's a little different over here. You know, as soon as you get drafted, if you perform, you're in the big leagues. And I think our catcher is, he's only 35, but I think he's been in the big leagues for 14 years. So, or the Korean big leagues. I was like, you know, I'm going to let him kind of dictate, you know, how we go about this. And I think that kind of gave me some, you know, through pitches that I probably normally wouldn't. So the last two, you know, I really just went back to, you know, how I go about my business. You know, I throw my pitches and my counts and my pitches to my batters. And, you know, even if, you know, the scouting report maybe says one thing, I got to remember, you know, I might be one of the top 3 to 4 hardest throwers in this league. You know, the fastball plays a lot, and, you know, it can get soft contact against some guys. So, you know, just going about my business, you know, how I know and what I know will work. And the last two outings, you know, have really, you know, came back around, and I've had two good ones. So
I love that. It's so cool that you have the opportunity to work with like a great veteran catcher over there. Is that kind of like in 20 when you were in DC with Yan Gomes? I remember just like hearing great things about the way he handled the staff, and he had like 10 plus years when you started working with as a rookie over like in this country. Having like a veteran catcher in that country, is that, can you draw any maybe similarities to that kind of thing?
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, our veteran catcher, his name is Tae-Goon. He is unbelievable. He's got, you know, so a lot of experience. You know, they traded for him last year at the end of the year. So they got him and then signed him to a contract. You know, he's very vocal. He's a clubhouse leader. You know, he keeps everybody in check. And, you know, everyone, you know, really respects him and what he has to say and what he does, you know. And he's one of those guys on your team that, like, it's funny because he's not a bigger dude, but he's kind of like a, I don't even know how to explain it, but he's not like macho man, but he's not a small guy. You know, he shouldn't be a slap guy, but last year he only hit one homer. So he doesn't hit a lot of home runs. But man, when there's men on second or third, less than two outs, you know, he gets the job done. He slaps it into right field, and you know, everyone's been giving him crap because he doesn't hit a lot of homers. And the other day, he hit two home runs in one game, and everyone was like, "That's your total home runs for the whole year." And we're, you know, April 10th, we're like 15 games in. They're like, "You're not gonna hit anymore." But he's a good dude. You know, he takes care of us. He makes, you know, like going about our business, our scouting, and our, you know, our game plans, it makes it really easy knowing, like, hey, we're able to do this, and like, trust me on these things. Like, if I do something that, you know, back to back or whatever, like, really trust me. He reads hitters well, so he knows what guys are trying to do here for sure.
I love that. So I talked to Brian about when he was in the KBO, just like the differences and like from a hitter's perspective between the MLB and the KBO. As a pitcher, what have you noticed like difference wise between the two leagues? Like in the lineup wise, lineup construction, the type of hitters you're seeing, like what can you talk about there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think in the big leagues, you know, your leadoff guy, you know, can be kind of sporadic with like, you know, the Phillies, they're hitting Schwarber, right? You know, who can absolutely do damage at all points. You know, he's a big time power guy with a lot of walks. Or you got, O'Neal Cruz, who, he's hitting 300 and, also can take you deep. Or you got some, guys who are going to get on base and maybe not have a ton of power, but, can still, get the line rolling type thing. I think, here in the KBO, your leadoff guy is one of your, more patient, pesky guys. A lot of times it's a small guy. Like I think yesterday's leadoff hitter was like 5'5". And then, my two starts ago, Doosan, or no, my last three starts, now that I think about it, the leadoff guy has been 5'5" or shorter. So I pitched against Samsung. Last night I pitched against LG, who was the reigning champion. The week before I pitched Samsung, and the week before was Doosan. I kid you not, last night was 5'5", and the two times before was 5'4". They're like little lefties, and like, they're good players. Like they hit 300, they see like 8 to 10 pitches in AB. Like you make a good pitch down and away, they foul it off into the dugout. They are just annoying little hitters. So like you got to make sure you're trying to get them out early. But I think for the most part, the lineups are very similar. You got one through five or your top dogs. And I honestly like the team we played last night. They're probably one of the better hitting teams in the league, and they have like a WRC plus in the league as an average of the team was like 130. Yeah, they're pretty good. They're like the best hitting team in the league, and but like they're two holes, like damage lefty. He can definitely damage a three hole. Won the batting title at like 38, at like hit like 330. He's one of like the all time legends here. And then the four hole was Austin Dean, who fellow American who hit, 320 with 20 pumps last year. They just got some good hitters. I think one through five would match up with really any, triple A and have like that opportunity that could play in the big leagues. And, however the ball may fall, it kind of dictates what your numbers are. I think a lot of these guys can be big leaguers. Six and seven kind of depends. Usually all the catchers are kind of built the same here. Big bodied, and they're either free swingers. So right-handed free swingers who just try and do damage at all times. And, or they're like our Tegun, who, they free swing early in the count, and if you throw them a cookie, they're going to crush it, or then they like bear down and bow to you. So I think the only difference really is like eight and nine are real pesky hitters. And as to where in the big leagues, you got guys who, probably can do some damage. Like there's still power in eight and nine in the big leagues. I don't want to say there's no power because, anybody can hit homers, right? Like if you get the right pitch and you guess right on it, you can hit a homer. But eight and nine are those guys who are like, all right, we're really going to turn the lineup over. Like that's their job. They're not there to like hit doubles and homers. They're there to like, all right, if we see 10 pitches and get out, we've done our job. If we walk on eight pitches, we've done our job. If we bunt for a single, we've done our job, right? Like, I think I saw something that league average batting average right now, which I know we're still 3 weeks in or whatever, but I think league average right now is like 340 batting average or something, 333 or something. It's in like the, I'll check it real quick, but it's kind of crazy. The batting average is wild. But they let's see, it's right here. But I'm pretty sure it batting average is okay, I'm wrong, not 330. That was maybe a guy. 275 is league average right now, which is still
That's really
pretty
good.
good. So that's kind of, you got those guys who are gonna, punch it the other way, but one through five, can play really anywhere. And six and seven are got a chance to take you deep at any time. And then, eight and nine are gonna be pesky. Like two outings ago, I was like I'd only threw five innings and I was at like 91 pitches. And, you know, I had like a 6-pitch inning and like 3 1-pitch ABs. Well, then I go look at the box score. I had 5 10-pitch ABs. I'm like I threw half of my pitches to 5 batters, and it was like 3 of those counts were 2-2 counts. They weren't even like full counts. So like I had like 6 foul balls, 7 foul balls. It's like, just get out, like get a hit, get out. Like you're wearing me out. Like it's like goodness, just hit a single, do something. It's like so it's they work you a little more. But the hitters are good. They, you know, I it's hard to explain, but it's a little different, but man, they're good. They have their skill sets, and they're stingy. They stick to what they know, and they do what they do, and you know, you just got to grind it out with them at some point.
Was there a lineup or a hitter over here that did that to you? That was just like 10, 11 pitch ABs on you?
Oh, Freddie Freeman and me had like a 13-pitch AB in Pittsburgh one time, and he finally hit a ground ball through the, like he hit like 6 foul balls in a row, and I literally looked at him like, "Come on, man!" And he started laughing, and then he got a hit. And I was like, could you not do that like 10 pitches ago? Like what, like you're gonna get a hit. Like just do it early. Like don't like what are we doing? And he was laughing about it. But I mean, those guys that can really just like foul off stuff and wait for their own pitch, you know, those are the worst ones to face. Like, cause they spoil all your good ones, and then it's like, all right, throw a crap pitch, and then they crush it. You're like, just do it earlier than that, please. Like, that's the worst part about pitching. You get to those like 15 pitch, 10 pitch ABs, and you're like, come on. Like, you're wasting everybody's time. Like, either just strike out or get a hit or like take a walk. Like, don't just foul balls off. Like, you're making everyone mad. So.
Well, in your case, I know you have a 6-pitch mix, don't you? You throw, is it 5 or 6?
Six. Yep.
So is there like, do you ever like save one just in case? Like, all right, he's fouled like 10 of the other ones off. I'm just gonna break something out.
Yeah, I mean, like my curveball, I don't throw it a ton. I throw it, you know, to steal some strikes and maybe, but that's like in my scouting report. It's like, all right, if you have a long AB, throw a curveball. Who cares? Like, if he hits it, he hits it. If he doesn't, he doesn't. But like, just throw the curveball. Like, if we're not throwing it a ton after we get, you know, at, other than like 0-0 or 0-1. So it's like, just throw the curveball. Like, get it out there. Like, everybody's looking for something else. It's a little different speed. It's got much bigger break than all my other pitches, like vertically. So, yeah, my curveball is definitely one that now, like, I didn't throw it last year. I actually picked it back up in the off season. So now it's like, all right, I can throw it again. It puts a little wrinkle in there. Like, it's not like a great pitch for me. It doesn't grade out as like super, you know, high metrically, but it's like I can land it, and it's a little different look, and it's a lot slower, or it's slower than the rest of my pitches. So it gives me a little different look than everything else that I'm doing.
I like that. It's like a break glass in case of emergency. Like I've thrown literally everything else. Do you remember a couple of years ago when Brandon Belt had like a 30 pitch at bat?
Oh my gosh,
What
I would
would you
have a
do?
heart attack. I would literally like, I'd probably throw a knuckleball. Like, come on, like just get out of here. Like, what are we doing? Like, 30, that would ruin me. I'd be so tired. 30 pitches to one guy, it just mentally exhausts me. That's all it would do. I'd just mentally be like, all right, like start praying or something. Like, look up to the sky, do like pray. Like, I don't know. Like, that would kill me. I would be so upset if I had a 30-pitch AB.
I think Zach Greinke threw like an Ephus pitch one time. You just try to like lob one up there. I
Oh.
could just try that. I don't know. Might work.
100%. 100%. Like, you get me to like 15, 18 pitches, I'm doing something that I've never done before. I'm totally out on like grooving fastballs or whatever. Like, I'm going to throw something out of left field. Like,
Underhand, yeah.
yeah, left-handed curveball.
One thing I wanted to know about Korea too was like we've had Brian on a bunch and he talked about his experience over there, just like the language barrier difference. And like I think he was talking about this week when we had him on. It was just like the hitting coaches, it's like hard to have that like even though with translators, it's still have hard to have that dialogue with your coaches and like trying to improve. What's that been like for you so far? And have you like had to be like your own pitching coach in certain situations? Has that been a thing?
Yeah. So I think a good way to explain it is, you know, if you're like learning a language, everyone's like, English is the hardest language to learn. And people are saying that. And I truly understand why people say that now, because like the Korean language, it's not that like, it's not a like good language or whatever. It's fine. It's whatever. But the translation to what we know, or to what, how we speak in English is so different, because what one thing means to them, like they, a big translation for pitchers is like all throughout campus, how's your condition, right? Well, you're like, what does that even mean? Well, what they're asking is, how are you feeling? How does your body feel? Like, are you sore? They're like all those things for a pitcher, like, does your arm feel good? How is your body? Are you sore? Do you feel good? Do you need a day? Do you need rest? All that is combined into one thing of, how's your condition? That's what they're asking. So our language is so complex that like one thing that they say, or that they're trying to say, could be interpreted like six different ways for English. So like Brito, which is our Dominican left fielder, he's been here for 3 years, and he speaks like perfect English. Like he actually, he has a translator who is English. Like his translator isn't Spanish. His translator is English. So the other day, like he said, the hitting coach had texted him or had called him on a meeting and said, you need to start looking for the ball middle over the plate more. Brito was like, what? Like, I'm a big left-handed hitter, like with a lot of juice. Like last, I think he hit like 310 with like 25 homers last year. And he was like, none of these guys pitch me middle in. There's no way that that's what he meant to say. And, he was just saying like, look for the ball up, like over the middle of the plate, like look, like see it up more. And the translation happened to come out like, look for the ball middle in. And it was like middle in over the plate. And he's like, ain't nobody pitching me middle in. Like nobody throwing that ball. Like maybe the foreigners, but like some of the, he's like, everyone throws me down away. I got to get on top of the plate. And like, if they hit me, they hit me. So I just think, you know, because of how complex the English language is, sometimes there's a – so, like, for an example, yesterday, the first inning, there was two unearned runs. And after every game, if you pitch good, if you're, like, the winning pitcher and you have a good outing, you're the MVP, pitcher MVP of the game. There's a pitcher MVP and a hitter MVP. So I was the pitcher MVP, and you do an interview, like, on the like, a little stand podium out front on the stadium – to the fans. And the first question he asked was like, you know, you settled in after the first inning, but the translation came out was, your first inning was terrible. How did you settle in and make it better? And like, it was basically like, that's the translation was like, all right, the first inning was, you know, where they got the two runs. Mm-hmm. And like, it was like a difficult inning, but you got through it and you settled down. How did you do that? But when the translator told me, he goes, your first inning sucked. that's what he said. And I was like, I just looked down and started laughing. I'm like, I know what you mean, but like, that's not what you meant. So,
wow.
It's funny.
You lose kind of like some of like the subtleties and like the niceties that like you can phrase things in a nice way, but still get to the point. That's that's crazy. That just does not translate at all.
Oh, not at all. But also like this culture is so respectful, like unbelievably respectful. Like they will like do anything for you. Like anybody will do anything for you. You meet someone on the side of the street, they'll do something for you. Like it's unbelievable. You like, you leave your wallet somewhere and they'll like, it'll never get picked up. Like no one will steal from anybody. Like everyone is unbelievably kind here. So like everything that they say from when they are kids all the way to when they're older is genuine and is nice. So when it translates out to like being something that sounds like, oh, that inning sucked, you got to like take it for like take a step back and like, okay, they're not being rude. It's just kind of how the translation comes out because the language is so complex.
We interrupt this episode to bring you a word from the official sponsor of Not For Long Media and the Breaking Bats podcast, the Original Fudge Kitchen. It is a staple of the Jersey Shore with 6 locations in Cape May, Wildwood, North Wildwood, Stone Harbor, and Ocean City. The Original Fudge Kitchen makes all of their fudge in-store, guaranteeing a delicious product, so stop by and let them know that Not For Long Media and Breaking Bats sent you. Check them out online at fudgekitchenswithans.com as they are shipping fudge and sweet treats all across the country. Now back to the episode. I did want to shift gears just a little bit and kind of talk about like the lead up to you going to Korea. So in 23 in Pittsburgh, can you tell what happened? I know, I think you were hurt for some of that. And like, I think that kind of impacted how teams viewed like you this past off season. Can you just like briefly go through 23?
Yeah. So, in camp, like spring training, probably like a week into camp, I was kind of barking. My shoulder wasn't feeling great. Kind of told the team docs and got me on some meds, just to kind of, you know, pitch through it. You know, I, you know, everyone has bumps and bruises and, you know, or no one's really 100%, especially bullpen guys. It's hard to, you know, feel 100% all the time. You're throwing a lot. And, so I'd started taking, you know, some meds to like kind of just, you know, help me get through a little bit of pain and whatnot. So to get me going through camp and through the year. And I never really felt 100% after that. Kind of went through camp, didn't have a great camp. You know, I felt like my command was off. Some of my pitches weren't doing exactly what I wanted them to, but I felt like I was doing the right things. And like the results were just, you know, not there. Like not even like baseball results, more like the command results and like my movement results. I just wasn't getting, you know, my normal locations, and my ball was moving a little differently. I was actually cutting the ball way too much. Like in the big leagues, I have a cut ride fastball with the MLB ball. So it's like, you know, it's like 16 to 18 with like 3 to 4 horizontal, which is considered perceived cut, not a true cutter, because true cutter is negative. Well, beginning of last year, I was actually getting negative, like -1, -3. So something was pulling the baseball even more, and it was my shoulder, just because I wasn't healthy. But so, you know, we pitched, you know, some games there in the league. You know, I think I had like 8 innings or something, 9 innings. You know, I had a couple good outings. And then, you know, my last outing was in Colorado. And I'd thrown, I think we went from St. Louis to Colorado. And we had like a, you know, I don't know, 5-day stretch where I got hot or pitched in a game every day. I think for like 5 days, I'd thrown like, with like my bullpens, and I'd thrown like a combined over like 140 pitches or something. Like it was crazy. Like we were trying to work on some things because we were trying to figure out the movement stuff and like, was it a mechanical issue? And, you know, I went out and went back out for a second out, second inning in Colorado, and just didn't feel right. I think I walked a guy and they pulled me, maybe walked 2 guys and they pulled me. Just uncharacteristic of like me not being able to throw stuff in the zone. You know, I've never been like a full command guy, but like I would always battle to like 3-2 and like throw my best stuff and like could always get out of some trouble. So didn't really say it, didn't really, you know, think anything of it. Like, you know, it stinks, like whatever. I think after that day, I didn't go on the DL or the IL for like 10 days. And I didn't pitch any of those days for like the next 10 days. I was down for a couple days, and then we kind of were, we never had that like situation where I would pitch. Well, that whole 10 days, like I was playing catch, but I was super sore, like super sore, like soreness to where like I didn't like I couldn't throw a baseball, like off a mound sore. So, we get to like the day I went on the IL and I'm like sore. I'm like telling him like I'm taking these meds, like I'm not feeling good, like I don't know if I can even pitch, like I'm not feeling good at all. So like I go into the training room, I'm like, hey, I'm gonna put some like icy hot on and like I'm taking these meds, but like I'm like barking really, really bad. Like I'm gonna see if I can throw off a mound because I need to be available. So I went and played catch and I felt okay. And then I got on the mound and like they had like the TrackMan on and I was throwing like 80 in my bullpens. I was like trying to rip it, but like I had so much icy hot on, I couldn't feel anything. Like it was burning through my jersey. Like I was on fire. Like I couldn't even feel anything. And I was like, I'm not throwing hard. I'm not feeling good. So I went in, I was like, yeah, I think we need to get like looked at. So we went and got an MRI and I had I had a lot of inflammation. I had some small things in like my rotator and my labrum, kind of like two small tears. So, they were like, you can do cortisone, which is okay, can get you like 2 weeks and then you're back, but it probably won't work. And then they're like, we can give you a PRP, which has a really good chance of working, like over 80%. That'll take, a couple months. But it'll save you from like maybe having to go under the knife. And that's like the big thing as a pitcher, you don't want to be around a shoulder issue. Shoulders are scary things. So we did the PRP and that was April at the time. I think the end of April. And then, fast forward to end of July, I'm coming back off my rehab assignment and I'm feeling probably like 85%. But good enough to pitch and good enough to, go and compete. And that's when I actually had thrown a outing in Iowa. Yeah, Iowa. And had went like 1 2/3 or 2 innings, like no runs and struck out a couple guys. And we had a day game the next day, so I came in and just kind of did my treatment. I was like, I'm not gonna throw today. That was more than I've thrown yet. My velo was back, and they called and said they were gonna DFA me. So they said that, it was a short term move and whatnot, and they wanted me to, if I cleared, they were gonna, give me another chance and, pitch there and then come back. And it didn't work out and whatnot, but then I kind of, fast forward to the off season, you go and you just say, what's my best options, and there's some teams that were calling on minor league deals and, asking like, hey, are you healthy? We want to, do MRIs. We want to do all these things. And like, so everyone's big question was like, is your shoulder okay? And I knew it was. I was throwing I all off season, me and I worked with the guys at Tread, so we had a really good strengthening program, and we got my shoulder into a place where I actually probably hadn't felt this strong since 2022. So I arm wise, so we're getting like a couple minor league calls. I don't even think we had a minor league offer. And then the Kia Tigers had reached out and, said they offered me, basically they wanted me to do an MRI and stuff and get everything checked out. And they made a good offer, and I thought about it, and I, for me, showing health is a big thing. And coming over here and throwing 150 plus innings and, showing teams that I'm healthy and still, still a valuable pitcher is what I thought was the best, especially with the money, going. And I have 2 kids and, a house and my wife back at home. And a big thing for me was, providing for my family. You never know when the game of baseball can be taken out of your hands. So I thought about that, and I thought, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen? You know, I go over here, I make, you know, almost $1 million, and you know, I'm not good, and I get to come back and I get a minor league deal next year. Like, that's the worst thing that could happen, but I get to put $1 million in my pocket. You know, that was where I was at. Like, I can set my family up for a little more financial security. But, you know, the best thing that could happen is like what Fetty did, you know, and, you know, he came over here and he dominated and he got 2 years, $15 million. So, like, for me, the benefits of coming over here outweighed, you know, going and like being on a team where like they were like, hey, yeah, we love you, you know, and then you have a great camp and they're like, yeah, we want you on our team, like we definitely want you. And then the last day of camp, they're like, yeah, but we don't want to make a 40-man move. We're gonna send you to AAA. And then you go sit in AAA, and then it's all about like, okay, are you winning? Do you need a veteran? Do you need a guy who's got some time? Or are you not winning and you're gonna call up a young guy who's a prospect? Like, that was kind of where I'm at. Like, you know, I understand the game of baseball and I understand the business side of things in the big leagues. I probably have a sour taste in my mouth from what happened last year. You know, that's a different story on a different time. You know, I wasn't in the mode of like, I don't want to go and, you know, have a great camp. And, you know, other than last year, other than 23, I've had really good spring trainings, you know, other than, you know, 1 year. So, you know, I knew I could go have a good camp and pitch well, and I just didn't want to be in that case of like, oh yeah, we love you, you know, you're someone we want to have on the team. Like, yeah, you're the last guy in camp. We had to make a tough decision. I'm sorry, you're going to AAA. And then it's like, dude, like, then you turn down the opportunity, and you're making, you're making okay money. Like, I'm not gonna sit here and say you're not making good money, but like, $20,000 a month is a lot different than when you're only getting paid for 6 months a year than, you know, making what I'm making over here. So, you know, give my family some financial security and come over here and prove to teams that I'm healthy. And that's kind of what led me to coming over here to like, hey, this is what we're doing. We're gonna prove that, you know, I'm healthy. I'm ready to go, and I'm still a very quality pitcher.
No doubt. No, that's, you definitely been through a lot, man. It's, I had a question because, I read that one of the, like, I think you even just mentioned it, like, you're excited to go to Korea because you wanted to go out and prove that you're a starter, that you're healthy, and you could throw innings. I remember a lot of 22 baseball, Will Crow, out of the bullpen for that, basically the entire year, one of the best relievers in baseball. Was there ever a part of you back then where you're like, am I just a relief pitcher now? Like, was that like a hard, like, thing that you're like, I could just do this forever?
I mean, yeah, I think there's that's another thing that like maybe speaks to some of my value that I can bring. You know, I think I can be a valuable reliever. I think I can be a valuable starter. You know, I'm a guy who, you know, I'm not your 185 pound, 205 pound, you know, pitcher who's, you know, my body doesn't really like, I knock on wood, but you know, I can throw a lot of innings, right? You know, as long as like I take care of myself and like I'm not getting abused. You know, my body my whole life has been pretty good. You know, I throw 90, 100, 120, you know, innings all the way up through the minor leagues. So, you know, I'm a guy who can be a reliever. And at that point, you know, I was like, you know, this is fine with me. You know, I like throwing, you know, in games more, you know, like throwing 4 or 5 times a week is fun, you know, and there's not as much like built up like nervousness, I guess. Like, you know, you're starting the next day. It's your one time for 5 days. Like, you're trying to do it, you know. But you know, coming over here, like I wanted to come over here, and you know, I knew I could start. You know, in 21, my last 5 starts in the big leagues, I think. Well, my last 5 is that year as a starter. Were like my best 5 of the year. You know, I finally got some confidence. I finally, you know, we weren't great in 21, but I didn't have a ton of direction on what I should do or where I should go. And I started working with Michael Fisher at Codify, and so I was getting my papers and my like being able to like really dive in of like, okay, this is where you need to throw these pitches. This is where you don't to these hitters. So it kind of gave me like some clarity. And, you know, I thought I like had, you know, four or five of my best starts to end the year. So like going into camp in 22, I was like, you know, all right, I'm fighting for a job. I'm one of our five starters. Like I led the team in starts last year through 130 innings. Like this is like my second year. I'm going to be a guy for them. I'm going to throw a bunch of innings, and I get to camp and it's like, hey, you're going to be a reliever. And like, I learned that like a week after spring training started. So I was like, okay. So then, you know, like you said, I had a good year. Like you take away one outing, like I had, I went from like 75 innings and a 3-1 to 75 innings and a 4-5 in one outing. So like, you know, that's the thing that sucks about relievers. Like that one outing can really, really get you. But, you know, I think I was like top three in the league in appearances at that point. And that's the first time I'd ever been a reliever in my life. So like, I don't know, like not making any excuses on it, but like I was definitely worn down. Like my body was tore up after 22. And I think that's one thing that a lot of teams or not teams, a lot of fans maybe don't realize is that, you know, you got guys out there in the bullpen, you know, even if you throw 60 appearances, let's say, I think closers get somewhere around like that 55 to 60, unless they're really doing it. And then they get, you know, 65, but like, you know, some of these, you know, setup guys and sixth, seventh, eighth inning guys, they get 70, 75 appearances. That puts a toll on you. You know, because not only are you getting 70, 80 appearances in a year, you're also probably getting hot another 10. So you're looking at like 50% of the year, you're up, you know, at maybe over 50% actually. Yeah, like half the year, you're getting hot to get into a game. And then you play those back-to-back. So like you play 25 games in a row sometimes and you're getting ready probably 20 of those. Like, you know, at the end of the year, some of those relievers have, you know, their stats get really messed with because, you know, they're wearing down and stuff. So you got to give – you know, extra credit to some of those guys who can really do it all like throughout the whole year. And then, you know, maybe even give some of those guys a break sometimes who maybe have a bad one at the end of the year or a bad couple, because it is tough. It's, you know, you wake up every day knowing like, hey, I'm hot today. You got to be ready physically, mentally, you lock it in. And it does take a toll. And I know that's why a lot of relievers, they get home from the off season and they do not do anything for a while. So, it's definitely something, but, yeah, I definitely thought I was going to be a reliever for a while. And then, you know, the body just was last year, just, you know, a little small something happened and, you know, was able to get it fixed and ready. And now we're good to go.
Especially too, if these guys pitch in October. The other thing with this is like, and we've touched on this too, is like the arm injuries, and like trying to stay healthy throughout the entire year. This season in baseball in particular, I feel like we've seen like the best pitchers in baseball have all gone down with arm injuries, like Strider and Bieber and Cole and Valdez. Like you had Tommy John when you were in college. So you have a pretty good perspective on this kind of stuff. What, like in this sport today, what do you think is some of the contributing factors? I don't know if there's necessarily one that's like, that's it, but like what, when you look around the game, what do you think some of these arm injuries can be attributed to?
Yeah, it's kind of scary, you know, just in the fact of like, it is happening a lot. Some guys are, you know, doing different things. And I think it's a collective like group of things, you know, like, you know, guys are throwing the ball as hard as they ever have. Guys are trying to spin it, make it move as much as they ever have. You know, I don't think the preparation has anything, like some guys maybe don't prep right, but I don't think that's the issue with these elitist guys. Like, they take care of their bodies. They do the right things. I think, like for me last year when I got hurt, I was throwing a sweep. I was trying to learn the sweeper and learn a cutter, which I didn't really need a cutter. I'm not throwing it anymore. But I was trying to learn it in competition. And I think that's a big issue with maybe what's going on now is like the sweeper is taking the world by like, you know, by the balls basically, and everyone wants to do it right. And it's basically, we're in a world, especially in the MLB, it's adapt or die. You have to adapt or you're going to die. You're not going to make it. So everyone's like, all right, I got to learn a sweeper. I got to learn, you know, a splitter. I got to learn, you know, I need this curveball, you know, and we're not really training these pitches in practice form because we don't really have a lot of time like to practice these things. The only way to really teach them or learn them is in competition, right? And at that point, okay, all right, I'm going to go rip these sweepers that I'm probably not throwing right in game because I need to see if they work. Well, then you start ripping them and you're doing something different. And then your arm's like, well, what are you doing? You've never done this before. And then your arm gives out. And I think, you know, Strider's thing, you know, he had, like, he was a two-pitch guy with an occasional changeup. Now he's got – he figured out the changeup. Now he goes to the curveball, and he's starting to learn the curveball. Great pitch, like, unbelievable pitch, but you got to learn it in competition. Like, I can go throw a sick curveball in my bullpen at, you know, 85%, but that doesn't mean I need to go rip it in the game because it's, like, not my best pitch, you know what I mean? So, like, you're learning these things in competition, and I think learning new pitches and putting different stresses on the arm as well as trying to compete at the highest level, you know, it does something to you. And it's not probably the best thing, but that's what the game calls for. If you don't do it, you're done. You know, like, if you do it and it works, you probably buy yourself 3, 4, 5 more years and your career big leaguer. But if you don't do it and you get 2 months of bad luck, the team, you didn't want to try something new. We're going to move on from you, you know? And that's the way it is, you know, because those guys in the minor leagues, those guys in AAA and AA, they're going, what do I got to lose? If I do it and it works, I'm going to the big leagues. If I do it and it doesn't, I'm still in AA. Who cares? Like, so it's like they have nothing to lose, as to where, like, in the big leagues, you do have everything to lose. Like, oh, you don't got a sweeper. Like, we need more swing and miss stuff. Like, that's why we're going to do a sweeper. Like, if you don't get swing and miss, we're going to we need you to get more swing and miss, which is basically them saying, if you don't get more swing and miss, we're going to get rid of you. So then it's like, okay, like, here we go. Like, let's start chasing it. Let's start chasing what we got to get. So that's my opinion. I think guys are trying to, you know, guys want elite pitches. In the big leagues, you need, you know, you either need 4 quality pitches, like good pitches, or you need outlier pitches. And if you don't have that, it's hard to survive. And, you know, if you do have that, you can literally live off an elite pitch, you know. So I think, you know, you got guys trying to chase, you know, those elite pitches, and they're having to do it in competition. And, you know, putting your body in different stress positions, like different, you know, movements that it's not used to, is something that isn't easy on the body. And I think, you know, guys probably take more time off in the off season as pitchers, start their throwing later, as to where, like, for me, I was throwing my bullpens in November this year. Because I got hurt last year, so I was trying to make sure I had a good build up. My arm was where I needed to be, and I was able to learn my sweeper and learn, you know, the right way to throw it for, you know, from basically in November all the way to February, and then I had competition, you know. So I think that's a big thing. Is like if you're going to learn a new pitch and stuff, you need to be careful learning it in the heart of competition. Because you're putting new stresses on your body, and like that pitch is unnatural technically to your body. It's not a natural movement. Like, and people want to say they don't manipulate the baseball, they're just throwing it. Well, 90% of the time when you're learning a new pitch, you're manipulating the baseball and you're doing something that's not common to your body, which then puts your body in different stress positions at different points. And I think that's leading to some injuries.
What about the effect of the pitch clock? Because I know, did you pitch with that last year?
Yeah. I don't really think it has too much to do with it. You know, now it's even quicker. So I do think it's fast. I always have said it's kind of crappy, you know, especially since the competition committee. You know, I was a part of the MLP, the PA. I was the rep for the Pirates. So I got to sit in on some meetings and stuff. You know, we all didn't agree on it. Like, all the players were like, no, like, we don't know if there's injury issues, if there's not, if there's these things, like you're making it too fast. Like, we weren't fully against it. Like, we wanted to shorten the games, but we weren't wanting it to be like so fast where like we couldn't breathe, or like the pitchers with nobody on, we can't step off the mound. Like some things just didn't add up. So we were like, we need to get the rules right and then we can do it. And they initiated it no matter what. You know, it was, no, we're going to do it, we don't care, which is normal. And then they did this year the same thing. We're going to quicken it up, we don't care. Like, we got the games at 2.5 hours. We want them less than that. And, you know, I think, you know, the pitch clock isn't fun. The pitch clock isn't there. But it serves a purpose. You know, it gets rid of all this the time that is wasted. You know, I can remember pre-pitch clock, you know, you get a guy out and it's a minute before the next guy gets in the box. And you're like, come on, dude, like, just get in the box. Like, like, pop your chains and listen to your walk-up music and do your dances somewhere else. Like, whatever. Like, who cares? But, like, you know, making a guy get in the box in 15 seconds and every pitch has to be in 15 seconds or 12. I don't even know what it is now. Like, we have one over here, but they're in the trial stage. So you don't even get dinged for it. Literally, like, the umpire will be like, and it doesn't matter. They're like, whatever. Like, our coach was like, don't even pay attention to it. But, you know, it's annoying, but it serves a good purpose. But I do think, you know, it's quick, but I don't know if it leads to injury. You know, maybe it makes you tired more quickly, mm-hmm. but then again, like, do some more cardio or something. I don't know. Like, if you're more tired from the pitch clock, you probably haven't been working out enough and you're not in good shape anyways. Like, I don't know. It's not that bad. You know, you get used to it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would be a causing factor to injury. I think guys are chasing, you know, elite things, elite pitches, elite velocity, elite movement, and they're doing it in a fashion where, like, hey, we got to figure it out in competition. And I do think that's a big reason as to why the injuries go up more, especially in the first month of the year. You know, it's cold. You're going from a hot state to a cold state, and then you're still doing these positions. You're trying to get in these positions in chilly weather where you're probably not as loose as you have been for the last 8 weeks. Like, I think that has something to do with it too.
Wow. Yeah, there's definitely a lot that goes into it. I feel like the people that are, like, harping on the pitch clock, I feel like that's just kind of like, I don't know. I never bought that as a reason why pitchers' arm injuries were happening. It's just like, I don't know. But I know you don't have that much time left with us this time. We'll definitely have to have you back on. I wanted to do a couple last, like, rapid fire type questions before we get you out of here. So I've been on a quest. I've been trying to ask relief pitchers and pitchers just in general, why don't you guys use the bullpen card at Nationals Park? Is there just like I've never seen anybody use that.
I don't know. That's a good question. That is a really good question. That's one thing that over here, there are bullpen carts and stuff. And so we're Kia Tigers. Our bullpen cart is the new EV9, and it flies down the right field line at like 30 miles an hour. Like, every time a bullpen arm comes in, and they use it here, they love it. So that's one thing that they do use over here. But, you know, I remember Doolittle would hop in that thing all the time and just cruise in. Oh, it was great. It was great.
Yeah, like, I asked Pete Fairbanks, I was like, why does nobody use it? And he's like, we just don't think that that's like cool. I don't think they think it's cool. I think they like that run out to the mound or whatever. I'm like, guys, like they open the gates and they drive regardless. So it's like you're making a guy just waste his time. I want to get to the bottom of that. I have to ask more people. Last time we had you on, I loved your bullpen entrance song in Pittsburgh. Do you have like a starter song in Korea that you've been using, or is that even a thing?
It's kind of a thing. I'm using the song. It's called They Just Don't Know. But they don't really play it long. It's not like you get like a 2-minute intro. It's over here, there's chants, there's cheers. They are screaming and yelling at all points in the game. So like, even when when you're on the road and you're pitching, there's a chant going on for the batter with music being blasted out of speakers at all times. So, you know, they, at the beginning of the game at home, when I'm warming up, they're doing like a Kia Tiger song. And then they do a song where basically on the big board, on the big screen, it starts with like your leadoff and it shows everybody's picture. And they're doing like a chant and they say something and then they say their name. And then they do another one and say the next guy's name and they call out the team basically. And that's basically what I'm listening to as I'm warming up. And then after I throw my last warm-up pitch and there's like 20 seconds on the pitch clock or like the inning clock, let's say, they like play like 10 seconds of my song and it goes off. So not really. There's not really a pitcher song here, which is fine. It's not a big deal. But there's definitely a music going on at all points of the game. So you don't really miss out on music.
I remember Brian saying that about that at like Japan, just like they have like trumpets and drums and it's a whole thing.
If you have any time, check out, just type in Kia Tiger fans in Jamsil. So JAMSIL, Kia Tiger fans cheering in Jamsil. So Jamsil is Seoul, which is the big city. And we live in Gwangju, which is like 4 hours away from Seoul, but everyone moves from Gwangju to Seoul when they grow up. So when we go to Seoul and play in the big city, in the big stadium, we are like, it's basically a home game for us. It's like 85% Kia fans, like 15% Doosan or LG fans. And they are crazy. Like, it is absolutely nuts how much they cheer. But that's a good like YouTube video to show you like how crazy our fans are.
I love that. Throughout your career, if you had to pick a former teammate to start a podcast with, who do you think would be the best podcast teammate host?
Podcast teammate host. I mean, probably what are we podcasting about? Because that would be, if we're just talking about life, you know, I'm going to have to find someone who's got a little energy and spaz to them, but like we're talking about bourbon, you know, me and my buddy, like I got a couple bourbon guys, you know, I think, you know, if we're just talking like friendships, you know, like you want to start a podcast with your best friend, it'd be Reynolds, you know, me and Brian would probably start one up. I don't know if he would be the best podcast host because I don't know how much he would speak on there.
Is he a talker?
Not really. Maybe behind closed doors and stuff, but he's not super extroverted. But I do talk a lot, so that we could probably match each other up on that one. But you know, if you're talking like bourbon or something, like I'm a big bourbon guy. You know, you probably get Frazier. You know, Frazier and Reynolds are big bourbon guys. Kevin Newman would be another good one for bourbon. You know, so like us, that would be a good little group for a bourbon podcast. If we're just talking about like everything in life in general and someone who I could, you know, shoot the crap with and someone who would probably hold their own really well would be Bednar. You know, he's got a little spunk to him and you never know what to expect from him. So I think podcast wise, he would be a good one just because you're going to get some stuff out of left field and off the wall, which would be great.
Damn, that would be a great podcast. You and Bednar, a couple icy lights.
You get him going. You could talk about anything for a long time with him.
I remember my favorite clip from the last time you were on was just like people were confusing you for him. So that would be.
Yeah, that happened for a little while, but you know we figured that one out.
last question. So I know you've been watching a lot of baseball and you're like your morning time. It's like the time difference is weird for Korea versus America, but I know you've been saying you've been watching a lot of West Coast games. Is there a pitcher that you're watching right now that might not have the national attention, but you're like, damn, this guy just rocks?
I mean, I got to play with this guy last year and he's a rookie. But he's doing it. He's with the Pirates. Jared Jones, you know, he's throwing the ball well, and he is about as electric as they come. You know, I think that's a guy that you can, you know, you can mark down as he's gonna have a really good career, and he's a really good dude. He's got a good head on his shoulders and stuff. So, you know, he's an easy guy to cheer for, and I think, you know, a lot of people are gonna know who he is. Here soon. Let me think. Is there another one that's not so just right in front of your face? You know, I feel like that's like an easy choice.
I have one that if you ever catch an Oakland A's game, Mason Miller.
The closer. Yeah.
He threw 104 today.
Oh, yeah. That's electric. That's hard to beat. I had to watch the game the other day. You know, this guy's been kind of up and down, but I think since July of last year, a lot of people might not know this, but since I think July of last year, he's in top 10 in the AL in like every category is Reed Detmers. And, you know, I think he struck out like 12 the other day or something, but, you know, his last like 15 starts, he's like top 10 in the AL in all rankings, like punch outs, batting average against, whip, OPS. And, you know, the Otani stuff was probably outweighing, you know, him like kind of sneaking through there. But, you know, they got a sneaky, good, young talent group over there. And, you know, I know Tyler Anderson as well. So, you know, TA threw well the other day, and then, you know, Detmers threw well as well. And, you know, they got some good young pitchers. If they hit that like next step, that'll be really good. They could be a really good team too. So I think Detmers, that big curveball, it's fun to watch him throw that thing in there. He's had that since his days at Louisville. So that's a good guy that people could probably start following.
I like that. Yeah. I feel like you have a great perspective on that. Pitchers on pitchers. That's like, yeah, I'm definitely have to check out some more LA Angels games. I'm a big Ron Washington guy, so
yeah.
I saw he got angry the other day. It's just like that's classic Washington.
I saw him get upset with the Joe Adell thing. I was like, yeah, he's oh, that was funny. So
that's awesome. But, all right. Well, I know you got to run. I'd love to have you back on here again at some point. You're the man, Will. Best of luck the rest of the season in Kia. I'm sure we'll be talking a lot here soon, but I really appreciate your time.
Yep. Thank you for having me. And yeah, we can make it happen some more. I got some time on my hands, and you know, we can get the group together and just talk some baseball and whatnot, and have a good time.
And before we get out of here, a special thank you to the band Stick Figure for allowing us to use today's intro and outro music.